and welcome to the Handbag Designer 101 podcast with your host, Emily Blumenthal, handbag designer expert and handbag fairy godmother, where we cover everything about handbags from making, marketing, designing, and talking to handbag designers and industry experts about what it takes to make a successful handbag. Welcome, Hennessy Warner, to the Handbag Designer 101 podcast. Hi, Emily. How are you? Thank you so much for having me on. I'm so excited to have you. We do go way back. I've seen the iterations of your bags evolve and grow, just like you with your brand, Les Sarah. And to those of you who ever look at your name that says Genesis, but it's pronounced, what's the correct way?
Hennessy.
Hennessy, right. Which must have been confusing for, you know, most people, because most people don't get things, right?
Yeah, that's been something that I've been, since a little girl, since I moved to the U.S., that's kind of been like the, going the first day of school is, oh, and Genesis, and I'm like, no, it's Hennessy, and then we get into the whole conversation, why is it Hennessy and not Genesis, and yeah, that's just kind of been how it's always been for me, so...
And how old were you when you moved to the U.S. and where's your family from?
Yeah, so I moved to the U.S. when I was 5 years old. I am originally from Venezuela and my mom is Venezuelan. My dad is American. So my dad met my mom in Venezuela a few years before I was born and here after my fifth birthday. So I've been in the States. Well, not I've been, but
later. Where did your family move to?
So we moved to a small rural little town in central PA. Yeah, so it was a big difference. Big, very big difference. I was the only...
How many little Latin girls were running around there?
No, absolutely not. Only one.
Wow. So not only are you moving there, you don't speak English.
Right.
So there was clearly, you know, no ESL class there for you. So it was like, did you have any siblings?
I did not. So, well, my dad, he was married previously and he had children in another marriage, but they were much older than I was. So I was pretty much raised as an only child, basically.
So you were the bonus baby of it all.
Yeah, basically.
Wow. So did your mom speak English?
She did not. That was one thing that I remember vividly is her struggling with the language and everything and me just learning at school with kids and TV. And you know how kids are. They're like sponges and pick it up super quickly.
So you learned English before her?
Yes. Yes.
Wow. So you have a recollection of being the one who is actually almost translating for her and and taking control.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess. I mean, I have some recollection of it, but it was, I mean, I'm 32 now, so it's been a few years, obviously, but my mom now, like she...
Are they still in Pennsylvania?
No. So I am now in Florida after, I'm sure we'll get to my story of where I've lived, but we all live now in Florida near Sarasota. So
were they there before you moved back?
Yes. Yes.
Gotcha.
In 2019, they moved here.
So at least they're in a place where there are people already speaking Spanish.
Yeah, yeah. My mom has made friends and my grandma also lives with us. Like I grew up with my grandma. That's how I was able to take the Spanish and not know. Because, yeah, so they all live here and yeah.
Wow. Wow. So can your dad speak fluently or is it still choppy?
And very, very. Wait, you mean Spanish?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, he has a very strong accent. Very, very strong. He understands everything. So you can't get too much past him if we're speaking in Spanish.
You know, all of these things of journeys of what people go on, it speaks to, you know, and I could be totally wrong, but it speaks to almost a parallel life of an entrepreneur that you throw yourself into something and you're almost doing it without even thinking about what could go wrong because you've already been through this, even without even being aware.
Yeah, absolutely. And my parents themselves were entrepreneurs. So I kind of saw this from a very young age of all, whether it was the risk taking, the moments, the highs where we all celebrated to, you know, drastic changes. And you're right. I think I have been kind of, what's the word?
Conditioned.
Conditioned, exactly. Conditioned to kind of see the world in a different, through a different lens, I guess.
Right, right. Yeah. So what did you study?
I studied business. I never really considered myself creative. But I feel like we all have a sense of creativity within us. It just takes something to kind of spark that. But I went to school for business. I got my degree in business administration, business management. So I finished that while I was living overseas. And
why overseas? What were you doing there?
I know. So I moved to Europe when I was a sophomore in college.
Like moved?
What's that?
Moved.
It's my little love story, I guess, of life. I met my husband while I was in college, and he was 2 years older than me. And he got a very, very unique career opportunity to move overseas. And we tried the long distance thing for a few months, and it was not fun at all. And so I spoke to my parents and everything, and I pretty much decided to leave and just start like, ciao.
Yeah, ciao, arrivederci.
I was on my way to Europe. And yeah, my one condition for my dad was like, you better finish school, which I was like, yes, I will, of course.
Did you transfer schools?
No. So luckily for me, I always say that it was kind of like fate in a way. So I went to school at Temple University in Philadelphia, and their business school had just started their online program. And this was before like everything was online. So it was kind of new, I guess, in a sense. And so because I had like my 2 years
covered already.
Right. I was done. Like I could do my other classes abroad, like remotely, I guess. And so it just worked out perfectly where I went to, what do you call them? Academic advisor. And yeah, and I told her what my idea was. And she said, you know what? We can do this. There's going to be a few classes that you might have to take extra, but you can definitely get it. Yeah, that was kind of like my ticket to be like, okay, let's go. So yeah, this was in 2012.
So at what country did you pack up and move to?
I moved to Italy, and we lived there for 1 year. Then we moved.
So did you pack up and move and live with him?
Yes. So that was like, it was a whole like.
That's scandalous for a nice little Venezuelan girl. Like, right? And we're not married, and I'm not, my education's not done. And
right.
And what did he do?
He was an athlete, which was very risky. I always consider, it's funny that we talk about this, because if you were to ask me, like, are you a risk taker? I would have been like, oh my gosh, no.
No.
Yeah, then I talk about this and I'm like, yeah. I guess I am.
Well, yeah, but you know, funnily enough, it's like, this is exactly what your parents did.
Right. And that's really funny because it was exactly what my mom and dad did. And that was my biggest, I don't want to say argument, because it didn't take much for me to convince them.
Right.
They loved my husband.
That's never obvious. So lucky for that.
Right. Exactly.
So how is his English?
No, he speaks perfect English. He grew up going to like English classes as a kid. So his English is perfect.
Okay.
But yeah, so that was kind of like my negotiation leverage that I had there. I was like, you know what? You guys did something similar a few years ago. And my dad can't argue that. So.
Nope. So you packed up. You moved to Italy. You're 20. You're taking classes. Are you working? Or you're like, that's cute. I'm a student.
No. So I wanted to, obviously.
But you couldn't.
But I couldn't.
Right.
Yeah. For one, we needed to be married because I was just his girlfriend. I could only be there for 3 months on like a tourist visa.
Right.
And so, but my idea was not to stay for 3 months. Our idea wasn't to stay 3 months. Obviously, I didn't get up and leave just to be like, all right, I'm going back to the U.S. now, you know?
So,
yeah, it was interesting. I was not able to work, but I was a full-time student, basically. The only thing was that my classes were at 2 a.m. in the morning. That's a time difference. It was like I was doing a night shift. I would sleep during the day, study in the afternoon, have class in the middle of the night, and then do work. And like, it was just, I did this
nuts
for like 4 years because it prolonged my 2 years.
Right.
The time difference, everything.
So at this point, you prolonged it for 4 years.
Yes.
Without making money. So you were living with him off his basketball salary. The two of you as like very young people being like, it's us. Yeah. Now why?
When I say he played basketball, it was not like a lot of people, when I say that, they're like, oh, so, you know, like NBA level. No, like not the case. Yeah, we have a like for in Italy, it was a good salary, but for two people, everything, it was just one salary for one household. And then, of course, we started our family. That also was in the mix. So it
Were you married by the time you had kids?
Yes. Okay. So we ended up for a few reasons. Obviously, we cared about each other a ton. But for me to stay overseas, I had to be married. I couldn't, you know, unless I wanted to be there illegally and whatever. But yeah, so we ended up getting married in 2013, a year later. And we started our family 2 years after that. So I was.
Did you finish school?
Yes. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I did not finish school at the time. I became a mom my senior, like my last year. So.
But technically, you were already 23, 24 because you extended it 2 extra years. Yeah. So whatever.
Yeah.
That's also crazy young, by the way. Yes. Nowadays.
Oh, my gosh. Now when I think about it, I'm like, I was 24. A child.
Yeah. Proper child bride, child mom. That's insane. Literally. Oh, my God. So, yeah.
I'm sorry. I was going to say my life has not been like your conventional path at all.
Right.
If that makes any sense.
Dude, I don't even know what conventional means anymore.
Really?
Give it up. Yeah. You know, it's like, look, I've got friends who've had day jobs since we graduated, and I'm often scoffed saying, ha ha ha, look at you. But meanwhile, you know, they have the safety, they have the security, they're making good money, they've saved a lot, they've been able to, you know, I don't know how happy they are, but 20 years in, it's a totally different life than that of an entrepreneur, let alone a handbag designer, let alone someone within fashion.
Right.
So, you know, they've had their ups and downs corporate internally, but in terms of what we deal with on a day to day, it's like, you know, feast or famine or eat what you kill. Or, and as a brand, I mean, nobody wants to. We all want to take that next step to have that tipping point moment to something bigger.
Right. No, definitely. I completely agree with what you're saying on that.
Yeah. Well, in terms of if you're a new mom with very little people and you've got this basketball playing husband, and that kind of puts you in a very odd spot. Like, what am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to work? Do I day job in Italy or do I start something on my own? So how did you end up with a setup and how did that happen?
Yeah. So for me, coming from a family, a Latin family, and the whole conventional, like I had the opportunity. Venezuela today is not what Venezuela was 30 years ago.
No.
So coming to the US, I was kind of always like pictured to have that conventional life, you know, and I always saw myself kind of taking that path.
Mm-hmm.
But life happens. And that's the one thing that I always like when people ask me about this whole journey and everything, I'm just like, life kind of throws a ton of curveballs at you and you just kind of figure it out. And so that's kind of what happened to me when I was overseas. Before leaving, we had this plan, right? My husband is super plan driven. Like he wants everything structured. And I'm kind of more like on the whim a little bit more. But we did have a structure of like what I was going to do, what we were going to do, and our plan for the next 5 years or whatever. And that kind of just went out the window whenever you get there and it's like you don't know the language, you don't have a visa, you're 21 years old, like it's not, you know. And so that's kind of what happened to me. So my security at the time was finishing school. So that was kind of like my focus for those years. And I loved it. I got to experience the world at the same time finishing, you know, my school. But when schooling ended, I just had like this void. I was like, okay, I'm a mom and I'm at home all the time. Like, I want to be able to also do something else.
Right.
I looked into maybe working in a boutique, something.
Right.
Clothing, accessories, fashion, all that stuff. But at the same time, my husband's career, I always depended on what he was doing. So,
which is so hard for someone who grows up in this, like, you know, no matter what anybody says about a Latin family, about it being male dominated and machismo, it's the matriarchy. The mom runs the family.
Yeah,
absolutely. So it's like, you're the neck.
Yeah.
So that must have been really hard.
Yeah. So that was the thing for me. I was like, okay, I want to be able to kind of have my own thing. I want to be the stay-at-home mom for my kids because I love being able to do that. And I know not everyone has that luxury, you know? But when I actually, it took me a little bit to kind of figure out how I was, like, my timeline was I finished school. I was already, like, Elena was already here for, like, 2 years when I finished school, actually. Mm-hmm. I finished school and I was pregnant with my second baby. So I turned in my thesis. I graduated everything. My son was born. And there I was like, okay, I need to figure this out. I can't keep doing this. So it was just kind of a weird turn of events kind of thing. I all of a sudden got really interested in the manufacturing side of handbags. And I watched a documentary unexpectedly one night while I was nursing my child. And I was just like learning a bunch about this. And I just randomly told my husband, I was like, I need like a creative outlet. I need a passion project. I need to do something that like kind of keeps me busy. And so that's how kind of how it all started as far as like the research. I did not speak Italian at the time. I understood everything, but I never got to the point where I felt comfortable speaking it. So starting the brand and starting all this stuff kind of also gave me that push to speak and learn and everything. So yeah, that's kind of how it all started. But the more I kind of like once I dove into it, buying your book was the first step I took. I bought the Handbag Designer 101. And that was kind of like the catalyst to this whole thing. Because
my God,
I didn't even know it was possible, you know?
I hope the book helped.
No, it did. It did. Because I knew nothing about handbags, fashion. I knew nothing. So, like, I knew what I learned from business school about how to start something, management, that kind of stuff. But as far as like the creative side, it gave me a better picture of what I was kind of stepping into. So,
I mean, the hook of the book was really how to start a handbag line when you know absolutely nothing about being a handbag designer or handbags.
Yes.
And that's what happened to me. And I just kept detailed notes. And then it turned into this like, oh, damn, maybe this should be a book. And actually, I didn't know that. It wasn't until I met a woman in jury duty, and it was grand jury duty. And that's a month. And I mean, I know you've been out of the country. I know you're just back in the country, but you know, with jury duty, it's a bunch of chuckleheads. Like, you're like, this one's crazier than the next. You find the person who looks and behaves the least crazy, and you're like, we're going to be friends. I'm going to sit next to you, and that's it.
Yeah.
And she had a bunch of bridal magazines, and you know, wedding magazines are really heavy. So to carry them around, it's like either you're getting married or you're not. She didn't have a ring. So I'm like, oh, she's industry. So I went over to her. I'm like, what's with the books and no ring? And she's like, oh, one of my clients is writing a bridal book. And I was like, clients? Book?
Yeah.
So by the end, she's like, you know, you should write a book about this. So I'm like, okay. And that's literally how the book happened. I said, well, I already have it half written because I have a dossier of everything I've been doing because I've made so many mistakes not knowing a damn thing about any of this.
Yes.
And it was like, okay, here's a pitfall after pitfall. And I started teaching while I was finishing my MBA, and I started having handbag designer clients while I was running my line. And my line had literally was just still a zygote. So it was kind of hilarious that here I am teaching students about fashion marketing and PR when I've only been doing this for 10 minutes, and let alone now people are paying me to consult for them. Right. So I might as well have a book.
Yeah. And it gives you so much credibility, even if it has been for just 10 minutes, according to you, but years in the making.
If you ever wanted to start a handbag brand and didn't know where to start, this is for you. If you had dreams of becoming a handbag designer but aren't trained in design, this is for you. If you have a handbag brand and need strategy and direction, this is for you. I'm Emily Blumenthal, handbag designer expert and handbag fairy godmother, and this is the Handbag Designer 101 Masterclass. Over the next 10 classes, I will break down everything you need to know to make, manufacture, and market a handbag brand, broken down to ensure that you will not only skip steps in the handbag building process, but also to save money to avoid the learning curve of costly mistakes. For the past 20 years, I've been teaching at the top fashion universities in New York City, wrote the Handbag Designer Bible, founded the Handbag Awards, and created the only Handbag Designer podcast. I'm going to show you, like I have countless brands, to create in this in-depth course from sketch to sample to sale, Whether you're just starting out and don't even know where to start or begin, or if you had a brand and need some strategic direction, the Handbag Designer 101 Masterclass is just for you. So let's get started and you'll be the creator of the next it bag. Join me, Emily Blumenthal, in the Handbag Designer 101 Masterclass. So be sure to sign up at emilyblumenthal.com/masterclass and type in the code podcast to get 10% off your masterclass today.
Well, fun fact, the book didn't come out until the Handbag Awards was around out for like 5 or 6 years. I mean, the book was like a 6-year gestation period. It was like giving birth to an ostrich or something like that. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it took a lot of iterations and redoing. But in the end, I think much like anything, launching a brand, you need some sort of street cred for people to take you seriously. So going back to you, you start this idea, you see this documentary. How do you turnkey this into like, have a first sample? Now I'm doing this.
No, like when I look back, it was a year of just research for me because
it should be.
Right. And so for me, it was, okay, like what possibility for one? Yes, I'm in Italy, but like, is anything around me? Are there companies? Are there manufacturers? Are the suppliers here near me? Can I go see them? Can I, you know,
and I had to talk to them.
Right, exactly. And so like, I know LinkedIn is like really big right now, but at the time, LinkedIn was just kind of like a place to put like your resume and that was about it. You just had it there. So I started reaching out to different manufacturers and suppliers and like
Italy.
Yes, in Italy, okay. In English. But then I would like try to Google Translate and Google Translate was
busted.
Right?
It was busted back then.
Exactly. And so I reached out to a lady, which this is another thing is there was a lot of trial and errors. Who do you trust? Who do you not trust? Like, I mean, I'm 5'2", and I look like I'm 14 half the time. And when I would get on these calls with people, they'd be like, who are you? Like,
how old are you? Because Europe did video chats, whereas America didn't. So you were already ahead.
Yes.
You were Skyping people.
Yes, exactly.
Oh my God.
So that was not a good contact to have in the long run. We ran into some complications and whatnot, but she was the one that kind of like gave me the groundwork of it and kind of told me like, you have to do this and you have to contact this person first and whatever. Right. And one day scrolling through Instagram, I run into a post by Linea Pelle, which is like the trade show for, I don't know what you call them. I always call them trade show, but I guess it's not a trade show.
It's a trade show in Italy. It is what it is. You know, to our people, it's a trade show.
Yeah. And so there I kind of got like my first wind of like, okay, these are the suppliers. This is the materials and the trends and everything. And I'm like, okay, I'm here. So I picked up literally every brochure that I could find and like any little piece of paper. I got to the hotel room and I started like organizing. I put into Google Translate, like, what does this mean? You know, it was like a whole. But it was so fun to me because for me at the time, it wasn't like, oh, I'm starting a brand. I'm starting a business. It was just, this is fun. Like I got a babysitter for the day. I'm going to take a train to Milan and I'm going to go do this, you know?
Oh my God.
And so, yeah. So in one of the books, I ended up finding my first manufacturer. And before I contacted them, I took a course on digital design with a girl from Argentina. And she was great because I could speak Spanish and she could kind of like explain to me the process in a language that I understood.
Right.
And yeah, so I learned like the basics of design, like all the different elements and the names to all the different, like your book, I had your book that had like all the
silhouette directory.
Exactly. And so
it had the anatomy of the handbag because you have to know how to speak to something.
Exactly. Exactly. So that was just it. I just, from an Instagram post going to the trade show, I don't know, it was weird. I don't want to say that it was luck because I think we create our own luck, obviously, because I was looking in the right places. But all the little pieces just kind of lined up over and over again. I did call like 1,000, I don't want to say 1,000, but I called a ton of manufacturers. I got a bunch of no's, you know. And then the one that I reached out, they were 8 hours away from where we lived. And I took a train and presented myself because I was like, if I like... It's weird. I know today a lot of business is done virtually because of everything that happened. But for me, virtually, especially over there, like people want to see you face to face. They believe to trust you.
Yep.
everything. And I just kind of pitched it to the idea to the manufacturer. And he's like, you know what? I normally don't do this, but I have three daughters and they all work here with me at the factory. And I see that you're super passionate about this. I'm going to give you a shot kind of thing.
Isn't that wild that you've got to pitch yourself to a manufacturer that you're going to pay?
Right? I'm like, I will pay you to do this. And no, and over there, it's very...
Well, it's all about respect. And, you know, it's like you work for them and not the other way around, because exactly. They will not tolerate their time being wasted, because otherwise you'll get bumped.
Yeah, exactly. And so for me, that was the thing that I had to learn very early on, that really there. And I was honestly, I didn't even negotiate anything. Like, looking back, I was like, wow, I probably could have gotten those samples for like 50 euros less than what I ended up paying them for. Yeah. But I just wanted my foot in the door somewhere.
Right.
So he gave me the pricing and everything. And I talked to my husband, because obviously I was not working at the time.
Right.
And I was like, look, I want to do this. It's going to be a commitment from the both of us. You know, like, you're the one that's technically working out there and earning money.
Right.
But I'm really passionate about this. And we talked about it for a little bit, and he was always super supportive. And so that's kind of how it all started in a nutshell, because it was.
It's so interesting, because people always say, oh, you manifested that. You manifested that. And it's not that I'm averse to this construct of manifesting, but I think on the flip side, it's bullshit, because when you're working 24/7 on something, that's not manifesting. That's work.
Wow.
Yeah, that's work,
you know?
That's work.
Find out.
It's like, did your husband manifest being a basketball player? Or did his mom take him to practices every day, you know, since he was 6 years old, and run around taking him places and bring him snacks and make sure he did his training? And make, I have to say this, because this is, anytime I see an athlete, I always ask, you know, how involved was your mom in this process?
Because, oh, for sure.
Someone needed to get you there. So, and, you know, this isn't manifesting. This is like, you made it happen, because number one, there wasn't an alternative. And number two, like, that's it.
Yeah.
That was it.
And it's not that I'm against 100%, like, saying against manifestation, but I think it's having the, like, the right mindset, I think, obviously, of like, be like, okay, this is what I want and I'm going to go after it. But it's not like, oh, it just happened. Like, you know, because I thought about it one day and it just magically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, just to move ahead a little bit. So your bags were beautifully made. I loved the colors. You know, it always had such a soft and thoughtful palette. And I really liked your hardware. Do you think that having your bags made in Italy, which is something most people aspire to, you know, your bags were on the expensive side.
Yeah.
So that must have been challenging, trying to get into mainstream, get people to understand and pay, because the consumer public of who your potential customer is, it's very difficult to convince them that your product is worth the money and they should come back. So how did you grapple with that in terms of brand evolution?
And it's not like I have that completely figured out, because it's still a very ongoing process. And it happened where I changed kind of the brand story and the brand messaging to kind of fit the new person that I was marketing my products to. So my first two silhouettes were a backpack and the mini backpack, right?
And backpacks are difficult when there was, and it was all leather.
Yes.
That's very difficult.
Yeah.
As you learned.
Yeah, absolutely. And for me, I was so set on, and that's the one thing looking back, I was like, I was so focused on becoming this creative that I didn't really take the time to learn about the marketing, the sales, the distribution, like, how do I get people to buy this product kind of thing. So it was all trial and error for years, basically. Yeah. But I want to say that I wanted to be as true as possible to why I started this to begin with. Italy for me is a huge part of my story, my family story, the brand story.
Yeah.
That for me, it was more so, I don't know if I wanted to, I never really set out to be like, hey, I want to be the next it bag, which I know that's what like the awards and everything is kind of about. But I just wanted to create something that was true to the authentic made in Italy label and try to price it in a range that wasn't, you know, $1,500 for a leather backpack. I wanted it to be somewhere where it was more accessible in a way.
Right.
But I learned the hard way that business-wise, margins and everything into consideration, it's not a profitable model to create a completely made in Italy handbag, mm-hmm. all leather, great hardware, like you said, and price it at a point where it's accessible for some, obviously. But when it comes to the business side of things, it was very difficult. And I struggle with that daily. You know, after the awards, I was able to do a partnership with Wolf and Badger. So the awards kind of gave me that window, I guess, you know, it gave me credibility as a handbag designer, since I felt like I needed that
confidence.
Exactly. I earned that kind of street cred with the awards that we were talking about earlier. And that's the one thing, like for me, after the pandemic, like 2020 and 2021 really for the brand were great. But for me, it's so tough dealing with everything at home, then trying to grow this by myself. I ended up taking 2 years away from the brand. I put everything on hold and I was like, I don't think I'm ready for this. I don't think I'm prepared enough. I need to take some time to continue researching on how to do this.
Right.
I ended up signing up for like a master's in marketing while I was in Italy. And then life happened again and I'm back here again, kind of trying to figure everything out again. So I feel like it's always like this constant loop of up and down. You have things figured out and then you run into a wall and then you have to, you know, kind of do everything. So for me right now, I ended up getting a partner with the brand. She is amazing. Yeah. And so together we're kind of...
Was that hard? Was it hard to give up control? Or were you like, oh, thank God?
No. For me, it was either I give up on it completely or I get help. And that's where for me, it was like, I loved it. It was a lot. Like, it was a lot of thinking, like, do I... Like you say, give up some of this control and bring someone in, or do I just stop? And it's just kind of like this hobby that maybe I create bags for myself because I love handbags and the Made in Italy thing and everything. But that's where we're at right now. So we're kind of in this relaunch of the brand right now. She has a background in marketing, which is super helpful for me.
How did you meet her and how did that happen?
That was all via LinkedIn.
Wow.
Yeah, she is great. Her name is Cassie Tucker. She's been not only for like the building of the brand and business and everything, but just a great support system. And I think we kind of touched on that earlier. This process or this journey can be so lonely. And I tried to spend
isolating.
Oh my gosh. And so I tried before trying to find someone that maybe I could collab with or something together, but being over there, it was nearly impossible.
Yeah.
And so when I found her, it was not only were we building a friendship.
Where is she from?
She is from Florida.
Okay.
She lived in New York. She worked for a marketing agency in New York. She also moved around the country a good bit. And so we kind of bonded on that. So yeah, so she is now like, she's a big part of what Le Sarai's is aspiring to become. And yeah, I wish I was at the point in my journey where I can be like, this is what I did. Now I'm successful. And this is how other people can do it.
Right.
But I'm still very much still in the growing phase and I'm still learning a ton daily. So,
well, I think, you know, look, to be a designer, to create a brand, we all know what the market is. We know how saturated it is. We know what it takes and how challenging it is to create our own USP, our own unique selling point. And with the evolution of social media and this idea that you must be a brand with fans, I don't think there's anything to apologize to say that this is taking time for me to get it right and to figure out how to make this work. Because at the end of the day, the goal of creating a brand is, yes, to make a beautiful product, make people happy, but it's to make money and get people to come back and buy it again. Mm-hmm. So if, you know, that takes you more time, then it takes you more time.
Exactly.
That's it. You know, and I think as a designer, I think especially as a woman and as a mom and your accountability for your time and you at the end of the day evaluate like how successful was I, how much, you know, what did I bring in or what did I do, and to quantify your success per day, especially when you're doing something like this, when the ROI isn't so tangible that, you know, you have to measure everything in moments. Like, okay, so today I figured this out. Now I'm moving this forward and here's how I'm doing this. And I think as a result of that, I can do this, which could then create something that people will theoretically come back and buy. I mean, are your bags still going to be made in Italy?
Yes.
Yeah, 100%.
That's the one thing that I won't sacrifice is that, because that's the one thing that I hold very dear. Because then, like, if I manufacture outside of the country, it kind of loses for me the meaning of what I was creating.
The DNA of your brand.
Yeah, because I always saw it as like my connection still to Italy. And to this day, like, we're planning trips to go there to go meet again with another manufacturer that, after the backpacks were made, I ran into other issues and I had to find another manufacturer. And this one is actually amazing. And it's just, I don't know, I'm very loyal in that sense.
That's a female thing. It takes a lot for us to leave.
Yeah.
I don't want to say anything, you know, relationship wise, but by nature, we are known to be very loyal to people who are nice to us. And whether or not they're taking advantage of us or taking money or it's a bad deal, they are nice to us. And if they are nice to us and they listen and they, you know, give us a few nuggets of education, maybe try it this way or that way, then you quantify it in your head like, well, you know, they're doing this for me and they're doing that for me. And, you know, that's experience that takes for you to be a lot more cutthroat, not even so much cutthroat, but be like, no,
right.
That's costing me too much.
Yeah,
this is I'm creating a product that's too expensive because I lack scale.
Yeah,
it will probably never lower my prices because I came in as a freshman. Now I'm a senior and they're still treating me like a freshman and I'm being charged as a freshman. And that's very difficult for you to be like, I have to break up with this person in order to evolve and grow my brand.
Yeah. So for me, there's that element of like emotional attachment to the Made in Italy kind of storyline. But the one thing that I've learned too in this process is just surrounding yourself with the right people. Mm-hmm. Like you said, I am more so, and I'm a Cancer, so I'm very like nurturing.
I'm like, go with the signs again.
Signs. I'm sorry.
It's like every third person brings it up. I'm a Cancer too, but you know, I guess that's a nurturer. I don't know.
I haven't gained that skill, I want to say. I don't want to say I don't have, because I haven't gained that skill yet to the point, because I have been screwed over.
And it hasn't.
Right?
And it hasn't.
And I have like taken out my anger, not on the person, but like at home, I get frustrated and I vent and everything. But
yeah,
I have surrounded myself with people who maybe aren't so much like me, where they're more, okay, Hennessy, like I will handle this part of maybe the negotiation process or whatever. And I was super lucky to have met, her name is Annalisa. She used to have a boutique in Italy before COVID and everything. And she brought my bags into her store and she kind of helped me understand what it means to go retail instead of just direct to consumer from my website kind of thing. Yeah. And she is that business person where it's like, look, they're charging you too much.
Yeah.
You have to lay the groundwork. If this doesn't work, then you move on to the next person.
Yeah.
So I'm starting to build that network of women, whether it's to grow from, like to learn from, or have them directly be like, look, I will go, I will talk to them and I'll get this figured out for you.
You know, 2 points for us to wrap up. One, the value of having a boutique owner who tells it like it is, because I think people underestimate the value of those retail connections because they are the eyes and the ears of the consumer that will say, people would buy this if this was a different color, if this was a different material, if this was significantly less expensive. You need those people. And not only that, but they pay you up front. So this whole thing about getting into department stores, people get all glitz and glam. And as I said to designers where they're like, oh, I almost got into Saks. I said, well, I almost got into Saks, but then I went and got sushi. You know, it's like you're either in or you're out, and they see the value in these department stores. They consider you based on traction, sales.
Yeah, it's business. I mean,
it's 100%. And two, the importance of having more than one manufacturer. it's hedging your bets like anything, because if one screws you, then you're left with nothing. And you need to have a few of them, one who could do this, one who could do that, and then cross-pollinate the sampling so you know if this happens or that happens, I've got backups.
Yeah.
So I think all this information has been so educational, and I want to thank you so much for sharing your journey. And truly, Hennessy, I'm so taken with your process and your passion. And, you know, people say passion, but, you know, like, does passion make you money? Well, maybe not, but I think you needed to keep you going. And, you know, I understand that you had to press pause, because sometimes we do have to press pause and we have to leave it sitting there. And, you know, wine gets its taste and flavor over a number of years. And I think, you know, you have to sometimes go on that path to look at it from all angles after all the shit you've been through, to see it in a way like, okay, my life has changed, and therefore that kind of bag has changed, therefore my customer may have changed too.
Yeah.
So if you could share us how we can follow and learn more about and with Laysada and get more information.
Yeah. So our website is Laysara, Laysara.com. I am on Instagram, which is Laysara.studio. You can find me on LinkedIn. Even though I'm not an expert, my brand hasn't made it huge. I'm not, you know, Beyonce isn't wearing my bag or anything, but
not yet.
Who knows, you know, but I am a few steps ahead of someone who's just starting out. So even if it's, hey, how did you do this part? I am happy to lend a hand, share my experience with someone who was me so many years ago. So
I get forward.
You're creating or have created this amazing community. So absolutely. If there's anything I can help with, if you see that I can be of help in any way, you know, I'm here. Thank you so much for having me on the show and just talking. It's great to see you again and kind of see what you're up to. And thank you.
Well, Hennessy, thank you for being part of the Handbag Designer 101 podcast. And we cannot wait to see what you do next. So follow her, learn more, and let's keep in touch. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to rate and review and follow us on every single platform at Handbag Designer. Thanks so much. See you next time.